My name is Malcolm Fairbairn. It was suggested that I'd say something about tachyons in cosmology. Okay? So the first thing I'll say is, I don't know how many of you have had dealings with the press, but when we wrote a paper that was called Inflation from a Tachyon Fluid, somebody got very excited and contacted us. And of course, they'd been watching Star Trek, so they thought tachyons travel, particles traveling faster than the speed of light. And much as I'd like to create a cosmological model where you solve things like the horizon problem with tachyons traveling faster than the speed of light, it doesn't really make much sense to me. So we were very specific with the reporter. These are not particles which travel faster than the speed of light. And we said it at the beginning and in the middle and at the end of what we told him. And of course, when he wrote up his article, fast particles inflated the early universe. So I'll tell you as well, I'm sure you're better than reporters, but I'm not talking about particles that are traveling faster than the speed of light. So what am I talking about? I'm talking about tachyonic instabilities in string theory. Basically, when you've got an unstable object in string theory, they decay, and the way that you know that they're going to decay is because there's a tachyonic mode which develops in the world volume theory of those objects. And so that hence the name tachyon. So I'll start by talking about tachyonic instabilities and the sense effective action. And there are plenty of things to cover. Thank you. Is this one better? No, okay. Do you want me to put them both on at once? Or stereo? Can we do some quadraphonic thing?
Maybe it is. So
I'll mainly be concentrating on can you hear me? Okay. I'll mainly be concentrating on inflation, although there's some other topics in to do with tachyons. And I know that Professor Klein and Professor Burgess are here, and they've done some work on things like strings that come from tachyons, and I won't be talking so much about that. I'll be concentrating on whether you can get nice inflation from these world volume actions. So I'll be talking about kind of assisted inflation and inflation with a warp hook and geometric tachyon. I'll say something about reheating, then I'll say something about tachyonic dark stuff in general. So as I say, in string theory, there are brains which are not necessarily stable. So for instance, if you've got a brain and an anti-brain, they are attracted to each other. But when they get closer than a string length away from each other, there's a tachyonic instability which develops in the spectrum of strings which are stretching in between them. And this signals the beginning of the decay of this system. And the process is modeled by an effective potential, basically. So you start off with a potential which is equal to the tension of the brain before they meet, but by the time they finish annihilating, you're left with absolutely nothing. Of course, the height of the potential is given by the tension of the brain. It doesn't have a minimum, yeah. I just drew one with a minimum, yeah. This was the naive thing that people used to draw before SEM came up with effective action. Also, wrong dimension brains. So odd brains in type 2A theory carry no charge under 2A fields, and vice versa. Even brains in 2B carry no charge under 2B fields. So they can decay without violating charge conservation, and they are unstable. So it's almost like you start off with an open string theory, and you're decaying. This tachyonic mode is signaling that you need to change your vacuum. You need to go from an open string vacuum to a closed string vacuum. Also, bosonic D brains. And I'll give you a list of references of people who worked on this before we did our work on it, because that's only fair. Here are some papers. And basically, most of these papers, the executive summary of them, with apologies to the authors, is that you get inflation from having a brain and an anti-brain, and as you use the potential in between them to motivate your inflaton. And then you use the tachyonic potential at the end as your waterfall field, so it's a kind of hybrid inflation. So that's what stops inflation. But that's not what we'll be talking about. That's what people mostly talk about, but it's not what I'll be talking about. I'll be talking about using the waterfall field at the end for inflation on its own, whether that's possible, what are the problems with that. And there's also a paper I should mention by Stefan Alexander where he had a D5 brain and an anti-D5 brain, and they had some fields on them. so that when they collided and annihilated, you ended up with a free brain universe and initial conditions for inflation. That's an interesting paper I should mention. Okay, the initial work on this used a sort of naive interpretation of the effective action on the brain that you would get when you had this tachyonic instability going on. But then Sen, in early 2002, came up with a, well, he came up with it a bit earlier, but he made it understandable in early 2002. He came up with a more precise description of the effective action in the world volume of these brains. So you have a potential there, and you have a Dirac-Born-Imfeld action here. And this T is this tachyon field. So the thing that you need to take away from this diagram is that the potential at the beginning, where T equals zero, this is when the decay starts. The potential is equal to the tension of the brains that are going to disappear. But then this V goes to zero as T goes to infinity. And if you take this Lagrangian and you do things like you calculate the energy density and you calculate the pressure, you get some behavior which is rather unusual. The energy density is given by the potential divided by one, the square root of 1 minus t dot squared. What's that? And the pressure is given by minus the energy density times 1 minus t dot squared. So this is telling you straight away that when you couple this thing to gravity, what you're going to get is something, some kind of cosmological effect where you start off with negative pressure when the process starts and the tachyon is not rolling. But then as the tachyon rolls down the hill, eventually you're going to end up with something with no pressure at all and a zero equation of state. Yeah?
One is, how reasonable is it to assume that there would be homogeneous condensation since finite momentum modes of this field still remain tachyonic? I mean, isn't it actually more likely that the field will condense inhomogeneously?
I mean, this is like initial conditions for any sort of model, right? I mean,
it's a string scale tachyon, right? So.
But I mean, if this thing starts to inflate, then surely the initial inhomogeneities don't really matter so much.
Right? Well, this is related to my second question. I mean, for real D-brains, the picture that seems to be true, following, for instance, Lambert, Lu, and Maldacena, is that the tachyon starts to condense, mm-hmm. inhomogeneities grow, and actually the brain kind of explodes well before you roll down anywhere close.
You're talking about production of closed string modes.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So, well, I don't think that's clear. I mean, obviously, for very low dimension brains, for like D less than 3, it's clear that these things just disappear immediately into closed string modes. But for P greater than 3 or P equal to 3, as far as I can understand, the calculation is not understood very well.
Okay.
All right. So obviously, I hope that they don't explode, otherwise I'm not going to get any inflation. So just to give you an example of what's happening here. So I'm going to do a comparison of normal scalar field inflation with tachyon field inflation. Okay. So here's the normal equation of motion for a scalar field. You've got the normal Hubble damping due to the expansion, and it's driven by the derivative of the potential. The tachyon field, it looks very similar. There's one thing that you need to be aware of. The tachyon field's got mass dimension minus 1. So this is all the same apart from this term here. But the interesting thing comes in here. The criterion for accelerated expansion, which we all know about in normal inflation, is that V is bigger than 2 times the energy density in kinetic energy density, which has got omega equals plus 1, so that you've got a net omega of less than minus a third. Here, the criteria for expansion is quite different. You need to make sure that the thing's not rolling too quickly. If it's not rolling too quickly, then you will get acceleration. The overdampings are analogous. But, I mean, what's the net result of all this? Well, an easy way to see how the two situations differ fundamentally is, let's assume you've got power law inflation, so you've got an exponential potential. Now, as you all know, in scalar field inflation, when you've got an exponential potential, if you start inflating at any point, you'll always continue to inflate all the way down the hill. So the criterion, if this is the inverse Planck mass and this is the expectation value of the field, the criterion is just that alpha squared is much less than 3. This is not true in the tachyon field, because as I've shown you, when this thing starts rolling too quickly, you're going to stop accelerating. So as t gets faster and faster and faster, you're going to stop getting inflation. You can also define slow roll parameters if you're getting inflation due to this effective action. In the normal way, just coming from the Hubble constant. So this is the Hubble constant at some fixed time, and this is the Hubble constant relative to that. And you take the derivative of this with respect to the number of e-folds, and this gives you the slow roll parameters, which are different from the normal slow roll parameters. And this allows you to do things. There's a very good paper by Steer and Vinitzi where they've taken this potential, and they've worked out what the effects on things like the tensor to scalar ratio are going to be. And they are fundamentally different functions of the slow roll parameters. And that's because the connection between the potential and the action of the scalar field is changed by this modified kinetic term. So can we get inflation from this setup? Is it possible? So we introduce a new parameter, x0. So this is the inverse Planck mass squared. This is the inverse mass of the tachyon, and this is the tension of the brain. And you see, so this is a numerical solution. So this is as t gets bigger, and this is t dot squared. So you see this thing is slowly rolling. But then when it gets to two-thirds, it stops slowly rolling, and it starts, you end inflation. So this two-thirds is numerically telling you that what I just told you is true. And as you increase this parameter x0, you get it spends more time slow rolling, so you get more e-folds. So you can plot the number of e-folds for different x naught, of course, and this shows you that you need this x naught to be more than about 3 in order to get 60 e-folds, or 5 to be safe. Near the top of the potential, of course, the perturbations are very similar to the scalar field case, and you can make naive substitutions, and it makes sense near the top. And there's a direct mapping between the two descriptions. And you can get approximately e-folds for the end of 60 e-folds for these parameters of x0. And of course, there's a constraint on the absolute magnitude of the of V naught, so that you don't create too many gravitational waves. So, do these parameters fit with string theory? If we take the parameters that we get from string theory, and we ask ourselves, do we get the right perturbations? Do we get the right amount of inflation? And can we not generate too many gravitational waves? Can we do it? And the simple answer is no. So if I write down the tension of the brain that you expect from string theory, I put in these things, V0 and T0, that I'm going to play around with later. But in string theory, if you just had one brain decaying, they would be 1, effectively. So it's given by 1 over G string times L string to the 4. That's the tension of the brain. And then the mass will be basically given by the inverse string length. And then, of course, you can mess around with the gravitational coupling, the relationship between the gravitational coupling and the string length. So you've got a degree of freedom there just by saying that you can pick your string coupling and you can pick the size of your compact space. But even with that freedom, you cannot satisfy these three bounds when these two things are equal to 1 for any radius of the compact space, okay? So this is assuming some flat toroidal compactification. So the three obvious solutions to get it to work. You change the number of brains, you change the tension of the brain, or you change the tachyon mass. Okay, so the easiest solution, of course, it's the one that we did, is you change the number of brains. And this is just basically assisted inflation. The idea is, what stops something from rolling down a hill, or what gives you slow roll, is the total expansion, it's H. But H can come from lots of Vs. So you can have a whole load of potentials that are rolling at the same time. And even though each single potential would not be suitable to get inflation, the combined effect of all of those potentials will give you inflation. This is just assisted inflation. This is as suggested by Little and Anupam in 1998. So if you've got lots of little inflatons, you can get one big inflaton that gives you a nice inflation. But then you have to ask yourself, so these D3 brains are space-filling in the decompactified dimensions. How many can we fit in the compact space? Well, they can't be bigger, closer than an L string to each other, so you can do naive calculations for a toroidally compact space, how many you can fit in there. And then it turns out that you can get nice inflation, but you need about 10 to the 11 brains in order to get it to work, all decaying at the same time. So this is not very good. Okay, so the second thing that I said that you could do is you could change the tension of the brain itself. And the idea, the way that you could do this has been suggested recently by Ramick, is in this paper here. So what you've got is you've got a 3+1 dimensional space-time with some warp factor in front of it. So again, the relationship between the Planck mass and the string scale and the volume of the compact space hasn't changed. But now the volume of the compact space is an integral over the warp bulk, okay? Now the tension of the brain, if you put the brain somewhere inside the warp bulk, you get some geometric redshifting. And also, the dilaton usually changes as you move through the warp bulk. So you get different coupling at different places in the warp bulk. So that means that basically the tension of the brain before you apply the gravitational redshift is also a function of where you are in the bulk. Also a tachyon mass redshift. So for instance, if to fit the normalization, you've now got an extra parameter. One question is, does this make sense? Does this stand up when you look at it in a bit more detail? So if you take a warp bulk, if you take NDP brains wrapping a P-3 cycle, so you're building a kind of brain world out of these DP brains, and this is the 3+1 dimensions, and this is the transverse space, then this is the metric that you get where you've got a harmonic function given by this expression, where this radius corresponds to the radius beyond which your warp throat approximation breaks down, and it's given in terms of the number of brains, the string coupling, and the string length by this expression. And this is the function of the position in the compact space where you are. This gives you the coupling in the various different places. So to keep the description valid, we require R over RP is much less than 1. Now, it turns out that the slow roll parameters, eta and epsilon, scale like the Planck squared divided by the tension times the tachyon mass squared. And this depends on the coupling and the warping by this factor here. So we need to make this small. But we know that this R is much less than RP. And this is much less than 1. So if we want this to be small, we need to make sure that this exponent up here is positive. And that's 7 minus P, P minus 5. So it only works for P equals 6. So if we've got D6 brains, we can get what we want. And in fact, if you choose a background of D6 brains, you can have a warp bulk, and you can get the right kind of inflation. So you can do it that way. Another way you can do it, the third suggestion that I had, was by changing the tachyon mass, okay? So I've shown you that you can have lots of tachyons going off at the same time, which is not very nice. I've told you that you can change the tension of an individual tachyon by putting it in a warp bulk, which is slightly nicer. And now I'm going to do the third thing. I'm going to show you that you can change the mass of the tachyon. Now this was from the idea of geometrical tachyons. In fact, it's not really clear if it's still a tachyon in some sense. So this, I've told you that the DBI action in the brain is given by this expression where you've got this tachyon. But if you allow the thing to move about in the compact space, you also get this term, which is a function of the location of the transverse dimensions. And you can see that it looks very similar. The tachyon field looks exactly like another dimension. And this has led people like Kutuzov to suggest that can you treat these tachyon direction as a real extra dimension of space? And what he's done to test whether this makes any sense is he's done an experiment in a lower dimensional space. So he's set up a stack of NS5 brains. So they've got a 6D world volume. And then he set the 4-dimensional remaining directions to R3 cross S1. And the NS5 brains, they induce a metric on this transverse space. And it's given by this expression here. So this H is a harmonic function that depends on the R3. And the Y, which parameterizes the loop. That's the world volume, the NS5 frame world volume. Okay. So how does this go? What does this do for us? So I've shown this harmonic function in the R3 direction. It behaves rather analogously to the one that I was using to get the warped inflation to redshift the tension of the brain, which was decaying. But around the S1, of course, it can't just die away to zero because you can't go to infinity in distance. So the fields go around, and you end up with a potential which is depends, like the cosine of the distance around around the S1. So immediately, if anybody has been working on inflation, alarms should be going off in your head because this sounds a little bit like natural inflation. So if you stick a D brain somewhere on this S1, which is not the same place that the NS5 brains are, the D brain located in the world volume of the NS5 brains but separated around this distance, it experiences a different dilaton, which is a function of this harmonic function, which goes like cos as you move around this thing. And you can define an effective Lagrangian in the world volume of this brain. And you can transform it to the tachyon field, so that you can make substitutions so that it looks exactly the same as the action that I showed you before. And it's exactly analogous. You've got the tension up here, but now you've got this expectation value of the tachyon field divided by this thing, the square root of k. Where k comes in here, it's the number of NS5 brains in the stack. So what we've done now is we've got something which looks exactly like the tachyon, but we've rescaled the mass of the tachyon by suppressing it by this larger number of brains. So we've got a hierarchy that we can use for inflation again. And this has been studied by Stephen Thomas and John Ward at QMW. And it turns out that when you calculate the slow roll parameters, this epsilon and this eta are given by the Planck mass squared divided by the tension of the brain times the size of this loop which comes into it. And you've got the number of NS5 brains in the stack down here. And you can do it for between 1,000 and 10,000 NS5 brains. So that's an improvement. Okay, I'm going to say a little bit about reheating. Someone just mentioned, when you get these D brains decaying, you get closed strings produced in the process, excited closed strings. Now, as we saw the other day as well, when you've got some mechanism which creates closed strings, creating higher mass closed strings is not favored because they've got much higher masses. But then again, when you look at the degeneracy of higher mass closed strings, there are lots more of them. Yeah. Yeah. In which respect is it different from brain inflation? In a sense, it's not really. It's just that it's not really different from brain inflation. And to call it tachyon inflation, I agree, is that it's a bit of a Swiss. But the point is that the potential looks a bit more like the potential looks more like the tachyon potential, and also that you get this kinetic term which looks the same as the one that you get in the tachyon effective action. Yeah. Yeah. So it's not really, I'm cheating a bit on that one, yeah.
You know that high mass strings are black holes.
Yeah.
So you have m squared rather than m.
Yeah.
Would that bother you?
No, because I think that the excited strings that get produced, they'll be below the mass threshold for black hole production. Okay. Yeah, but there's a well-defined spectrum as to when you get excited strings and when you get black holes being created, right? Which is a function of your energy scale relative to the string scale and the coupling, right? And I think it's fairly safe to say that. And this is a stringy effect. When these brains decay, they decay into closed strings. And I don't know what. I guess there's some regions of parameter space where you would expect those closed strings to be black holes, but I don't know.
Excuse me, a very simple question. So basically, you're doing like brain inflation, but when the brains are very, very close to each other.
Mm-hmm.
No, but what is the naive understanding would be that the annihilation is of order of of
I'm sorry, what is the what?
The time of annihilation of the two brains is of order of a string scale. So what is the physical understanding of why it takes so much time for this brain to annihilate? I know that you start from an action and so on, but what is the physical meaning of taking a lot of time to annihilate?
I mean, the amount of time that it takes to annihilate depends on the amount of time that it takes for this field to run down from the maximum to the minimum, right? And so that depends on the tachyon mass. So if you want that to take a long time, you either have to slow up the process or you need to reduce.
But the tachyon mass is big compared to age, so it's very. So if I look at
sorry?
The tachyon mass is much bigger than age. But, no? So I would expect a fast process. I don't understand the picture. But.
No, well, if you want to get inflation, the tachyon mass can't be bigger than H, right? Hey. Yeah, okay, it's bigger than H. Yeah, you're right. But I mean, the tachyon mass is just the inflaton mass in this model, right? So,
it's much smaller than H, usually, but it must be. So, but probably it's the action which is different. Anyway, if you can.
Okay, we could talk about it later. I'm not sure I understand your question. Okay, but anyway, when you create these, as these things decay, they generally create massive closed string states. The rate and the number of closed string states that are created doesn't seem to be well understood. The only thing that's understood is the average mass of these things, which is 1 over the string coupling.
So just about that, Are you now giving up on tachyon inflation and still referring to brain anti-brain inflation since you're letting the tachyon decay?
I'm going back to tachyon inflation.
So how can you have it both ways? How can the tachyon remain coherent and then decay? You're assuming that it's going to decay after it's reached near the bottom of its potential?
Yeah, I'm assuming that it's done a lot of inflating and then it becomes decoherent later on, right? I mean,
I see. It's different from what the string theorists say, because the same paper, Liu Lambert and Maldacena, that computes the decay rate of the D0 brains.
But you would expect the coherence to become bigger when the thing stops inflating, right? I mean, any coherence which develops in the brain is going to be wiped out when the thing's inflating. Wouldn't you agree?
I'm just saying that they point out that the most efficient decay mechanism for higher dimensional brains is through the same the same route as the D0 brain decays. That is, you view the three brain as a collection of zero brains, and they each decay independently on a time scale of the string scale. So it looks like a really big assumption to say that this thing's going to last for long enough to inflate and then it's going to decay. There doesn't seem to be any evidence from string theory calculations to support that.
Okay.
Anyway, it's just a comment.
Well, I'm assuming that the thing remains coherent long enough to give you inflation, and then later on when it stops inflating, then it becomes decoherent, and then you're going to get decay into closed string modes, okay? And if you can't, then you'll have to come up with a different reheating mechanism. But then you ask yourself, what do they decay into? Well, these closed strings are going to decay because they're going to have a temperature. And then they'll have to decay into modes. There will have to be some brains that are left over after some of them decay, otherwise there'll be nowhere for the standard model fields to live. And they will have to decay into modes on those brains. And of course, that will depend on the particular theory that you're looking at. And there's been a couple of papers recently by Klein and Burgess and also by Kaufman that look at the decay of D3 brains, but coming at the end of brain, anti-brain inflation. And their conclusions should be relevant for ours, given that you take into account the point that was raised by the previous speaker. Okay. So, talk about tachyonic dark energy very briefly. Okay, some authors have talked about whether you can use this field to get, I'm running out of time. Some authors have mentioned whether it's possible to use the tachyon field to get dark energy. It seems to be extremely difficult to motivate how you would get a mass which is as small as 10 to the minus 33 electron volts. That's all I'll say on that probe. Also, some people have pointed out that because tachyon field goes to a zero equation of state at the end of the evolution, and you can develop a parton picture, they've asked the question, can you use the tachyon fluid as dark matter? But the problem with that is you get, when you do structure formation in the tachyon fluid, you get caustics forming, and then you expect higher derivative terms to become important. You can't really trust the action. So in conclusion, tachyons can provide inflation, not just end it, under certain situations. There are various interesting possibilities developing with geometric tachyons, which is another version of brain anti-brain inflation, I admit. And then it's difficult to, I think it's difficult to motivate tachyon fields, fluids as dark energy or dark matter. And the final conclusion is the French are way ahead of us. I don't know about you, but there's nothing that I prefer at the end of a hard day than reading a French health food magazine. And this one shows you that the French had already figured out the importance of the tachyon field long before any of us were writing papers on it. So, for instance, I don't know what Nikola Tesla's got to do with it, but apparently we have to thank Nikola Tesla for everything. Space is not empty, but immersed in a concentrated energy field composed of tachyons. And then on the next page, it says it tells us that new doors to health and well-being are today opening thanks to the tachyon effect. Far from being fully explored, these effects will certainly rise to numerous discoveries, surprises, and applications in other fields. So that's the message that I'd like you to take away. This lady's obviously had her tachyons. Thank you very much.
Again, we had a lot of discussions during your talk, so I think we need to move on to the last talk of the morning. Bert Alvarez will talk about the heterotic standard model, a venue